I know I've mentioned before the examination paper which was given to a class of police cadets several years ago, but never mind. You'll have forgotten, some of you, maybe. Anyway, one of the questions read, you're on duty in the middle of town when you hear a crash and you realise that someone has thrown a brick through the jeweller's window. As you hurry towards it, a woman screams that someone has just run off with her baby. At the same time, you see a petrol tanker careering down the street towards a crowded bus stop. It looks as if the driver has had a heart attack. What would you do? And one cadet had simply written, remove uniform and mingle with crowd. And faced with such a huge and complex problem, that seems like a very reasonable thing to do. I guess that very easily, when faced with catastrophe or major problems, a natural reaction, especially if they don't directly affect us, is we want to look the other way. It would be easy to do that, actually, with the situation in the church in Congo, which they're facing at the moment, which I was mentioning earlier. If we think there's nothing we can do, actually, we'd probably prefer not to know about it at all. In the poem Burnt Norton, T.S. Eliot wrote, humankind cannot bear very much reality. I think it's true. The world is a hard place, and reality hurts. So what can we do when we see the suffering in the world around us? As I said, I guess the most common response is to kind of close your eyes and hope it'll go away. For others, there's this kind of desperate attempt, running around like a headless chicken trying to do something. But even then, it just seems like such a drop in the ocean. But there is another response. A response that is better than either of those by a long way. And it's the one that we find in our reading this morning. So I think Julie is going to come and read for us from Matthew's Gospel.
Today's reading is taken from Matthew chapter 9, verses 35 to 38, and can be found on page 974 of your pew Bibles. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, searching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and illness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks, Julie. So what can you do when you're faced with the suffering of the world, especially suffering on your doorstep? Where do you begin? When Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Jesus was traveling through Judea on a great mission, preaching the good news, healing every disease and sickness, and the crowds were flocking to see him and to hear him. And that was hardly surprising. Just in Matthew 9, we read of Jesus healing a paralytic, a woman who'd been ill for 12 years, then raising a dead girl, then giving sight to two blind men, and then giving speech to a mute. But just as important as those amazing healings is what motivated them. Jesus had compassion. Four times in Matthew's Gospel, we read that statement. It's here in Matthew 9, then in Matthew 14, when a great crowd had followed Jesus, he had compassion on them and healed all those who were ill. In Matthew 15, when Jesus feeds the 4,000, we read Jesus called his disciples to him and said, "I have compassion for these people. They've already been with me 3 days, and I have nothing to eat." And then in Matthew 20, when two blind men came to Jesus, Jesus had compassion on them and touched their eyes. Immediately they received their sight and followed him. And here, Matthew 9, when Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. And of course, we kind of know that it was often the people in those crowds were the rough end of society. Tax collectors, sinners, and Jesus could well have looked at them and actually thought, actually, I think I'll just keep my distance. He could have thought they really ought to straighten their lives out. Jesus could very easily have kind of quickly gone to the other side of the road but in fact he had compassion on them. And as you look round Morton, there's no shortage of suffering. There are problems like poverty, family breakdown. We see antisocial behaviour, drunkenness, selfishness. And it would be very easy to want to retreat from it all. And when we look further afield, to the suffering in the Congo, so many places, it will be easy to close our eyes to it. But Jesus shows us a better way. Respond with compassion. Respond with compassion. But even then, if you do have compassion for people who are struggling, what can you do? If Jesus had just had compassion, it would have been good, but it wouldn't really have achieved much. But Jesus went on because he understood what was going on, what their real problem was. When Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. And yeah, there are any number of reasons why he might have done that. Because they were sick and needed to be healed. Because they were hungry and needed food. Because they were blind and needed sight. I'm sure that all of those things were true of people in that crowd. But they weren't mainly what brought Jesus' compassion out. When Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Years of walking in the hills and watching sheep have convinced me that sheep are not the brightest of animals. I have discovered that if there is a barbed wire fence to keep the sheep in, some of them will have struggled through it and got themselves lost. If there is a road, they seem to think that it's for lying down on. Left to themselves, sheep just don't seem to be able to do anything sensible. And I'm sure most of the time they are blissfully unaware of the danger they are in. But what they need is a shepherd who could lead them. And when Jesus looked at that crowd, that's just what he saw. I said we know that it was often tax collectors and sinners who flocked to Jesus, the worst element of society. But Jesus had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. I guess you probably kind of generally have this sort of view of a shepherd that's based very much on the old television program One Man and His Dog or something like that. But I think the people around Jesus would have had something different in their minds. Especially in the Psalms, God talks of his people being his flock. It was there in that Psalm 100 which we started our service with. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. God's people are his flock. And so when God called someone to lead his people, they were to do it as a shepherd. So when David was made king, God told him, "You shall shepherd my people Israel, and you shall become their ruler." But even David, that great king of Israel, wasn't perfect. And after him, others came who were far from perfect. And because of that, God promised that he himself would come and be a shepherd to his flock. For this is what the sovereign Lord says, "I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he's with them, so will I look after my sheep." See, Jesus saw beyond the kind of immediate problems to what was the fundamental problem. He saw people who just needed someone who could lead them as God's people. He saw their greatest need was for a shepherd, a good shepherd, someone who could bring them into God's good pasture under God's love and care. Yes, there were people who were hurting and hungry. There were people who were confused, people who were anxious. But underlying all of those problems was that they were sheep without a shepherd. They were actually alienated from God's loving care. They were struggling to make their own way in a world where people were not created to make their own way. They were people who most fundamentally needed God in their lives. And that is the great need that every person has. The French philosopher Blaise Pascal wrote that there is a God-shaped hole in the heart of every man. And this morning, you might be going through a tough time. You might think that really your problem is financial or medical, or it's your job or some family problem or a relationship. But underneath all of those, if you've never given your life to Jesus, really your problem is that you are a sheep without a shepherd. Sometimes people do realize that that's the situation that they are in. One of my favorite authors, the Canadian author Douglas Copeland, he's not a Christian, but at the end of his novel, Life After God, he has one of his characters say this. Now, here's my secret. I tell it to you with an openness of heart that I doubt I will ever achieve again. So I pray that you're in a quiet room as you hear these words. My secret is that I need God. That I'm sick and can no longer make it alone. I need God to help me give because I no longer seem to be capable of giving. I need God to help me be kind as I no longer seem to be capable of kindness. To help me love as I no longer seem to be able to love. He knew that he was a sheep without a shepherd. And Jesus knew that the crowd around him were like sheep without a shepherd. What they needed most of all was a relationship with God, the Good Shepherd. And today, when we see the suffering in the world, when we see people struggling in our community, they'll have all sorts of presenting problems, but their deepest need is for a relationship with God. And that doesn't mean that other problems are unimportant, and of course we should be doing things like Family Pack and Food Bank and TLC. We should be doing what we can to support the church in Congo. But if that's all we do, we've kind of missed the point. Jesus shows that faced with those sort of situations, yeah, we do need to respond with compassion. But we need to understand what the real issue is. And then, when Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few." As Jesus looked at the crowds, he saw what they needed. They needed those who would bring them the good news, those who would lead them in the truth. And he saw that there would be fruit from doing that. But Jesus was also aware of the challenge in responding to that need. There was just so much to do and so few resources. And certainly the need is still as great. There are so many ways in which, I guess, Morton today is different to Palestine 2,000 years ago, but there are many ways in which it is the same as well. Because we live surrounded by people in a society which is like sheep without a shepherd. There are thousands in Morton wandering through life, unaware of the fact that their greatest need is a relationship with God. There are thousands who have no idea what it means to live life to the full, which is what Jesus said he came to bring. And then we look at ourselves and we think, what on earth can we do about it? There's too few of us. So what can we do? Well, we try to respond in practical ways, but it's just a drop in the ocean. More than that's needed. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. See, Jesus' response wasn't to kind of place the focus on the disciples and expect them to resolve this issue. He put the focus back onto God. And that's really important for us as a church. Last week, in our week of prayer, we were thinking about the challenges we face as we try to meet some of the needs of our community, as we work with children and families, as we seek to take the good news of Jesus to the people of Morton. And I said then, we could just quite easily bury our heads in the sand or just get consumed with busyness. But the actual thing to do is to pray That's why we'll be focusing on prayer again from this Thursday till the following Sunday as part of Thy Kingdom Come. Of course, there is a risk in praying, particularly a risk in praying that God will send workers into his harvest fields. Because in the very next verse, Matthew 10:1, it tells us that having prayed, having said that, Jesus then called his 12 disciples to him and sent them out. When you ask God to send someone, it may just be that you are the someone God is going to send. But the point is that you don't do it in your own strength. It's him who is sending you in his strength. And there's a world of difference between those two things. So Jesus, facing that crowd, responded with compassion. He actually cared about those people and their situation. He responded with understanding. He knew what their deepest need was. And he recognized that the only way that was ever going to be met was by God. He responded with prayer. So where do you fit into all of that this morning? Maybe you're here because you're struggling with life. And I have to tell you that whatever you think is your real need today, your greatest need is actually a relationship with God. And only Jesus can give you that. And without that, you will constantly be like a sheep without a shepherd. You will constantly be lost. But maybe you have made that response, and yet you look at the society around us, you look at the issues, you look at the problems, you wish there was something you could do to help, you just don't know what it could be. Well, actually here we see Jesus modeling for us what we need to do. We do need compassion. As we look out at our society, if we don't start with compassion, we'll never do anything. So ask God to help you to see people with his eyes and feel with his heart. We really do need to understand the situation. We need to know and just keep hold of the truth that actually whatever we see, the greatest need that everyone has is a living relationship with God, and only Jesus can give them that. And then when we have compassion, when we understand the situation, we just have to pray and pray and pray some more. In doing that, you've got to be ready for God to make you the answer to the prayer. But it's the prayer that matters.